Just so you know, we don't have audio yet.
I do now.
There we go.
I have three questions.
Great.
First of all, do we know for certain what the CPUC standards are for clearance under 26D? There's been some discussion here about, you know, do you need 8 feet or 11 feet or, you know, between the rail trail and the edge of the train? You know, are those standards clear? Do we have certainty about that? Or is that something that's in play and we'll have to find out later?
The answer is yes and no. So yes, we have certainty as to what is in the general order. The general order states the absolute minimum is 8.5 feet. And Mark, if you want to jump in, feel free to do so. But I think in summary, 8.5 feet is the minimum. However, with passenger rail service, the CPUC states that that is the minimum requirement and that often safety requirements needed for passenger rail service exceed the minimums. And so as a general practice, the minimum for passenger rail service in California that will meet CPUC safety requirements is 10 feet. But that is to any obstruction on the rail line. And when there's curves, they increase that safety clearance requirement. And as a rule of thumb, the industry practice is to design to 12 feet. And that would allow for the uncertainties of where different, and at this stage, I should say the industry practices to design to 12 feet at this stage, the conceptual stage, because we don't know where some of the equipment is going to be needed and some of the other requirements are going to be needed by the system. So that is how we're approaching the process. We're doing a risk-based approach since there's that uncertainty with the CPUC and the cross-sections adopted by the commission meet the intent of what we're trying to achieve with those that risk-based approach.
As a follow-up question, as we're designing our rail trail and its distance from the tracks, or where the tracks are now, in some cases, moving slightly and so forth, so are we therefore assuming that generally we're looking for 10 or 11 feet and would, in some conditions, try and go and ask for, would, I don't know if it would be a waiver or what, to go back to the actual required standard of 8.5 feet? How are we handling that? I mean, you're making a design now, and we're actually building the trail before the final thing is done. So we'd hate to put the trail down and then come back and discover, oh, that should have been 11 feet. We didn't leave enough room. Or here we could have had the trail be wider, but and we built it differently because we assumed the worst case scenario, but maybe we could have got away with 8.5 feet. So how are you handling that in a practical way?
Understand. So we've had a lot of discussion with the trail team. So there's been quite a bit of coordination on that effort. And Mark, I'm going to let you talk about how we are going through some of those steps. But when it comes down to the what we're trying to do, boots on the ground with the trail teams and some of the conflicts that we have, Mark can touch on some of the resolution efforts that we've been doing. But we're looking at the system as a whole and those requirements and seeing where would they have the ability to make changes, where it makes sense to make changes, and then maybe some different approaches where there's conflicts that may be too challenging to resolve at this stage. So I'll hand it over to Mark.
Sure. Thanks, Riley. So as I mentioned a moment ago in the CPUC's role, this is where we a project, any new project has a challenge. Because what happens between the at-grade crossings, when we talk about the clearance, there's no waiver or process to go through at this point in a project to get something approved that prior to it being constructed. And so that's the reason why we look at designing to a minimum that's greater than what the general order requires, because as Riley said, the unknowns that are along the alignment. The challenge we also have at this point is you have segments of the trail that are at a high level of design. A lot of those details have been worked out. We have a trail project that it's a 5 to 10% level of design right now for which a lot of those things are still to be learned or unknown as it relates to where railroad equipment and other things are going to go. So what we're doing is working with the trail teams right now. The rail team is looking as overlaying the alignment that has been taken through the public process that's continuing to be refined, and looking at, with the trail design as it's currently designed, and finding the areas where we see conflict that we believe there's an opportunity to make some adjustment early to mitigate the need in the future to have to go back and do repair or do changes to the trail to get the two to work within the right of way. There are a few of those areas where, because of things that are unknown at this point, for example, what the abutments of a bridge might look like in the future, or other things that we're not quite sure what the right of way needs are going to be for those elements, that we're going to have to identify and continue to work through in the future. But to the extent that we can identify things now where there's an opportunity to change the rail alignment, the trail, or both to best accommodate what can be done within the right of way, that's the goal of what we're trying to achieve.
Fair to say that you would be having some discussions with CPUC staff when you come up to these particular situations to say, what are they thinking, or how would, again, they're not going to give you a decision until you're done, according to what you've said, but can you have a productive discussion with them about how they might look at something more in a very concrete, specific situation?
Mark, go ahead.
I was going to say, yes, we're having consultation and discussions with the branches individually to talk through those issues. So to the extent that if we're doing anything that might affect an at-grade crossing, we can get very specific feedback. In the places where we have designs where we've got questions between the at-grade crossings about the clearances, that we can sit and have a conversation with the CPUC about what some of the possible steps might be to best mitigate that. Again, because to that point, it's our intent as well to have something as the design advances that we're not creating conflicts that would be an issue with the CPUC on clearance under that general order once a railroad has been constructed.
Thank you. My second question has to do with the crossings, and to what extent we're looking at the possibility of, I think they're called hospital zone crossings, where they don't have to blow the whistle, the horn at every crossing. To what extent in this design are we talking, again, informally with the CPUC, or what the potential is? Maybe every crossing can't be made that way, but to what extent is that a feasible thing? Because I think people have raised reasonable concerns about, where there are crossings that are pretty close to each other, that horn goes off and for 15 blocks, you can't have a conversation outdoors in your backyard.
I understand. And that is one of the things that we're looking at as we look at the operation and the planning for this project, and quiet zones have come up. As a part of or interest from the community, as we've gone out and we've talked to the public and we've talked to stakeholders. One of the things that it's important to understand is, just as we talked about the ultimate construction of the railroad in the CPUC's eyes, is at the responsibility of the owner. Those at-grade crossings where quiet zones are imposed become the responsibility of the municipality. Because ultimately the things that are done to protect that intersection, to make sure that it can operate in such a way in the crossing of a public roadway to ensure public safety without the use of the horn, that becomes part of the jurisdiction of what the municipality has a responsibility for. So through this process, in our discussions with the cities, we will be continuing to have that conversation about what their interest is and understanding of the responsibility that they would have to take on that part of an operation.
My final question has to do with the waivers situation that was mentioned. To what extent is it possible now to get any kind of understanding about the possibility of in relationship to getting a waiver for freight, conflicts with freight that have to do with temporal separation? In other words, the freight only runs 3 hours or four-hour segment or something during the night, when we're not running passenger service, to what extent is it possible to have conversations? Is it premature to start conversations now about getting waivers for that kind of a situation that would allow us to have freight and passenger service on the line, where, you know, we make some absolute agreement that we're not going to run freight whenever the passenger trains are running?
To that point, there's a nuance in what a waiver is that I think would be worth explaining. And then Mark will tell us more detail about that, kind of how that process works. The waiver relates to the CPC rail vehicle operations and their general order requirements for crashworthiness. The waiver relates to the vehicle. So you can apply to the CPUC for a waiver to operate a vehicle that does not meet the CPUC crashworthiness requirements, which are called 2G buffering safety requirements. So there is a process for doing it. But it's not about running freight versus passenger rail on the service on the lines. It's more about the vehicles that are operating on the service. So does a vehicle meet and is it approved by the CPUC, or does it not? And then if it doesn't, there's a process for the waiver. And Mark, can you explain a bit more about some of those aspects?
Sure. And I'm going to go back to something that Riley touched on a little earlier in the presentation. Is it related to the Corridor ID program from the Federal Railroad Administration and the intent to keep this project in conversation eligible for the most opportunity as it relates to federal funding? Under the Corridor ID program, the emphasis is on intercity passenger rail. And so when Tiffany talked through the vehicles that were discussed with the public and the public's interest, for example, in multiple units, are a technology that has been accepted to interline with the freight railroad, the Union Pacific, for example. So it has the capability to provide intercity service. That's critical if we want to maintain our eligibility for the pot of money that's there for intercity service. And that lessens the need for the type of waivers or other things that would be required for that vehicle to operate in a shared corridor with freight, for example, along the Santa Cruz branch line. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't need temporal separation to allow the passenger train and freight to switch along the Santa Cruz line. There's a lot of other things that go into that, such as the type of control that's happening along the line, what extent protection is being provided at grade crossings. There's a whole number of things that would go through that. But that is a conversation that we will be continuing in our early discussions with the CPUC to make sure that as we talk about what it means to have connectivity to an inner city system, what type of train we would use to provide that service, understanding the things that we would need to do to ensure that we would have the exemption or the approval when necessary to be able to operate safely within the corridor. So yes, simple answer is yes, that conversation's continuing, but part of it, to Riley's point, is defined on the type of vehicle and the type of funding you want to make yourself eligible for, particularly in the federal programs.
No, I think that's definitely a priority, is, you know, getting a vehicle type that we could get funding for. Thank you for your answers. They've been very helpful. I know they're a little technical, but at this point, it's really helpful to get this level of detail to understand what the potential is for this whole service. Thank you.
Sure.
Additional questions? No? Okay. With that, we will bring this to public comment, and we'll start with